live on Blog Talk Radio for Sports Club. I'm your host, Jeremy the Impact York, and joining me this week is the returning Coach Haywood Hill. How you doing, Coach?
I'm doing great, Jeremy. How about yourself?
I'm doing fantastic. Knock on wood, nothing dumb has happened with any of the equipment today, so we may be doing pretty well. Probably just jinxed us. But also joining us and also returning just back from San Antonio, we'll ask him about how his tryout with the Spurs went a little bit later on in the program. But he is the King ATLian, Reggie Walker. How you doing, Reggie?
Doing good, Jeremy. How you doing?
Doing pretty good. You know, let's go ahead and get that out of the way. How did the tryout with the Spurs go?
No, man, those days are long behind me now. It was out convincing one of our major military insurance agencies to spend a considerable amount of money on some software. So it went well, given I'm prior military. And,
it helps.
yeah, it does help. And then I kind of know a little bit about what I'm talking about, so that helps too as well.
I'd venture to guess that both you guys know a lot more about the things we talk about than most. But it's good to have you both on. Tons of fun things to get into. I mean, gosh, even the Falcons have got some fantastic things to talk about. Some weeks we kind of reach on things. Today is not one of those. So without further ado, today's episode, I don't know if you guys saw it when we posted it up. Today's episode is called The Book of Eli. And obviously we're going to start right there with that. Obviously Eli Manning is not going to be starting for the Giants this week. I do not want to use the word everybody else is using because it's kind of derogatory. But basically, he was asked to let Geno Smith start in his place, and between him and Davis Webb have been running the scout team all day. Apparently, he has the same demeanor. He's so laid back and such a team player that you're not going to have any problems out of him anyway. A lot of people were surprised that the Giants would do this. That's not really the point I want to make. The point I want to make about Eli Manning not being the starter for the Giants for probably the remainder of the year, this goes back to the Kaepernick thing to me. It's not what happened. It's how it happened. I don't like the way that they pretty much pulled the rug out from under arguably the best quarterback in Giants history. Yeah, Phil Simms, I'm including you too. It seems like they kind of did him a little dirty here. Reggie, what do you think?
Yeah, and I think that's kind of how the general consensus of how everyone feels is not, you know, hey, it's time to move on. It's time to start looking at some different options. I mean, Eli's been their quarterback for a long time. It's just, you know, coupled with the fact that, you know, people believe there's a consensus belief that, you know, the Mannings are royalty or NFL royalty, coupled with the fact that, again, he won them Super Bowls. He made them relevant more than probably any other New York Giant quarterback has made them. Some would argue Phil Simms, but Phil Simms didn't do what Eli did.
Correct.
And it was just the way they did it, right? And then for the owner to come out and say, well, it wasn't my decision. You know, it wasn't the general manager's decision. I mean, again, those are games. And everyone all got in the same room and decided to move on, probably with Eli in the room, but it's just the way that they did it.
Exactly. Coach, how did you see it?
Contraire. I think some tend to forget that chickens come home to roost. And if you go back and look at, I think it was 2004, if I'm not mistaken, I could be wrong with my date, when Mr. Manning first entered the National Football League, he held the San Diego Chargers hostage. Because they drafted him, he said he was not going. They got together, as Reggie spoke of, in a room and decided on where he would end up. And so now that he did have the success, and I'm not taking away from any of the success that Eli has had in New York, that also comes back to haunt you. So, again, you know, I agree that they could have done this differently, but let's go back and look at their coach who had to fight every year that he was there. The team wanted to keep him around, but then they pretty much let him go right before the draft on national TV. So it's kind of interesting to see how New York is handling certain situations right now. And when you're not winning or you're not, you know, competing at the level that they feel that you should do, they are going to be casualties when it comes to the New York Football Giants.
Yeah, in a way,
I can.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry, Jerry. Go ahead, man. I was going to say, I agree with that, and I get your point, Coach, because I thought about that too, especially after Phillip Rivers chimed in. But when you look at what has happened to the Giants this year, and quite possibly, likely, McAdoo is going to be a one and done, to let him come out and do it, and then come out and say, well, no, this is not quite like what we thought or what we were thinking or what we were saying. It's kind of cowardice in that regard. So I think that's where I kind of let go the notion about the whole draft debacle.
Yeah, I can see that.
I don't disagree, Rich. Go right, chime right in, Jeremy. I'm sorry.
No. Go ahead. You guys were going the same direction I was with it. I was going to say, Coach, I like that you reminded us all about that draft day debacle I'll give some credit to Eli. It was Archie Manning who was holding the Giants and the San Diego Chargers hostage. It was Archie more than it was Eli.
Absolutely. And then, again, like I said, he's had a wonderful career, but we all know that, you know, things change. And, again, going back to their head coach who was there for quite some time, and the team loved him, Strahan, and all those guys loved. And I'll just let people just kind of marinate on that coach. He had to literally fight the last 3 or 4 years he was in New York to stay on the team as a coach, even though the players were 100% behind him, said, hey, you know, don't put this on coach. Sometimes we just have issues internally with our team that we got to figure out. And then they finally, they finally let him go basically before the draft. I mean, on TV. I mean, so again, how this is going to affect New York down the stretch at coaches looking at wanting to come in there, players looking at wanting to come in to New York is going to be interesting now moving forward. I think they kind of revealed their hands on who they are right now, at least as of right now, unless some changes are made.
Yeah, and I was thinking that too, Coach. You brought that point up, is that it's going to be tough to recruit free agents and a whole lot of people into that debacle that appears to be New York, coupled with the fact that, like I was talking to another friend of mine that's a Giants fan, I go, listen, you guys let Tom Coughlin go. He goes to Jacksonville. These guys are on the verge of winning their division after being in the tank for years, and you guys are the complete opposite. So maybe this is something that Coughlin was fighting or knew earlier, and he just kind of got blown off.
Yeah, this is basically another New York team that's showing how dysfunctional and how easy it can go off the rails up there. I was reminded a few minutes ago that Josh Rosen, one of the biggest free agent, or not free agent, one of the biggest draft prospects at the current moment, has already said that for the most part, he can retract it all he wants, but he's basically said that he wouldn't enter the draft. He would just go back to school another year if Cleveland had the number one pick. I think you almost have to add the Giants to that mix the way they're acting right now, that maybe he don't want to play for them either.
Yeah, I think that even still, despite the recent activities of the Giants, you just can't compare that to Cleveland's perennial. I mean, they're almost 0-16 every year, so I don't think anybody wants to go there regardless. But, I can see that happening. They definitely didn't put themselves in a great position, that's for sure.
Exactly. And then, of course, all the national guys, unfortunately, when this happens so early in the year, in the week, I need to start doing Facebook Lives when I have not really a hot take, but when I have an opinion that I think the rest of the sports world is going to say before we get a chance to hear. The obvious choice a lot of people say is that if he gets his full-out release from the Giants, which would be the nice thing to do, at this point, even if he doesn't, where could he go? Everybody seems to think Jacksonville because of Coughlin. They are technically one away, but I think, honestly, the perennial choice is, the last time that somebody with that last name got let go from a team he had spent his entire career on, he got a call from John Elway, and John Elway has three guys who are listed as quarterbacks on his roster, but I don't know that some of them qualify. I honestly think that if I'm John Elway, I push all the chips in the table and I say, I'm going for Manning number two. Let's win another Super Bowl.
Yeah, I thought about Denver, but I also thought about Arizona as well. If Bruce Arians stays, he definitely would be a good look. Miami. I mean, there's a couple of the Jets. I mean, there's a couple of different places. He could go to the Jets and not even have to move his family, right? So, I mean.
Or his stuff.
Right. So, yeah, any one of those will fit. I did think Denver up front just because of the Manning connection.
Coach, how likely you think he could go to a place like Denver? Or you think we're just reaching here?
No, I think it's all plausible. I think a lot of it's going to depend on what Denver would do to make the move draft pick wise. He won't go for free because of his accolades and his status and the money that you'd have to pay him to make this shift. So I think it's all plausible. It's within reach, but I don't know if Denver is willing to do that right now because they're in a position to try to quickly get back to the Super Bowl or if he fits into a long-term plan for them right now. So it's all plausible. It makes for good news, at least good coffee break talk.
Oh, yeah, and it's made for at least about an 8 or 9 minute discussion here, which is always a good thing. But, yeah, I think as we like to do, we will table this until we see some other developments. It was odd that they're turning it over to Geno Smith and not the guy they drafted, Davis Webb, out of Cal. But we'll see how that develops. We'll see if an outright release happens or anything like that. This was going to be the leading topic up until the Eli thing dropped. What about Jason Garrett's future in Big D? I actually, at this point, even as a Dallas fan, there are a couple other cheaper options to Jason Garrett. I don't know that he's wearing out his welcome with Jerry, but he may start, you know, at least the coordinator or so is going to go this year. And if they continue to kind of struggle and kind of waste the Dak Zeke era, I feel like Jerry is in such a hurry to win one on his own, so to say, with him still behind the reins, that he could make a rash decision to try to hire somebody else. Coach, you see anything like that?
Yeah, I do. One of the things that's always been very difficult for coaches that coach in Dallas is the feeling of being micromanaged versus the reality of being micromanaged. And Jason has been able to be there for quite some time. But if you notice that they had veteran coaches prior to, and they only have about a 3-year deal. And that's about as much tolerance that happens on both ends of the spectrum from a veteran coach and also Mr. Jones being the owner. And then you notice that they move on to other teams and they fare very well. Wade did a great job, you know, when he left Denver. I mean, when he left there with the Denver, they ended up with the Houston Texans. So that's going to be kind of an interesting thing. But there are some coaches that are going to be out there. They're going to be available with some NFL experience if they decide to make that move that very well might jump back into the game. But it's going to be interesting to see. There are a couple of names that will come up later that we'll talk about as we move down our things in the show that I like to at least put at least an asterisk beside their name to see if they're going to become part of that, at least that discussion in the offseason.
Yeah, because I actually thought of a really good one that if Garrett was out could potentially be leaving his other team too. But Reggie, I'll go ahead and let you take it from here if you want to throw Big D under the bus. I mean, you guys did already do that once this year. So
no, again, I would just throw the 800-pound gorilla in the room that will probably affect the Dallas Cowboys going forward more than any of this is Jerry's stance as it relates to these players and the anthem and the protesting and all of these things. I mean, Jerry drew a line in the sand. That's a very dangerous line. And I think it was presumptuous of him to think that the Cowboys are just so great that people would just kind of get over it and take the Jerry Jones way. I think that's going to affect him more than anything. Whether it's being spoken about or not, there's probably a ton of players that are inside that organization that want to get away from what he's all about or what he's put out there that he stands for. And I mean, there's no secret that the majority of the NFL are African-American players. And I think that you're going to probably see more of a big decline with Dallas than anything else, just based on the fact that people aren't going to want to go there. They don't. Who wants to work for an owner that, you know, has blatantly put out there that, hey, you know, your issues, who cares? And that is kind of the approach or synopsis of the approach that he has taken to some of these issues. So I think that's going to be a bigger problem than whether or not Jason Garrett's there. It doesn't matter if he brings in, you know, Mike Vick. It's not going to matter. there are players that just won't go just because it's Jerry Jones.
And breaking news, this just in, in order to get out in front of the possible Jason Garrett being moved on down the line, I would like to throw my name in the hat to be the next head coach of the Dallas Cowboys. Jerry, I'll listen to anything you say. I just want a big star to put on my lapel, it, not one of those little bitty ones from the pro shop.
Turn it around. Turn it around.
Yeah, I want to go ahead and, you know, I can actually manage the team from here, actually, more than likely. We'll just do some Facebook Live, and I feel like we'll be fine.
Right. Just make Coach Hill your defensive coordinator, and then you'll be fine.
That is always the standing offer on the table if I were to get that, you know.
I wasn't laughing. I think it's probably about time for Coach to start moving up the ranks. But I digress because that's an off air topic that we've been talking about for a while. So anyway,
and the best thing that Coach could do is laugh this off right now because off the air we will probably actually have serious talks about that. But
I think you should play the Homer track, right? It's funny because he knows it's true, right?
Oh, we are. Oh.
It's funny because it's true.
Absolutely.
I will sit silent right now. You guys are on one.
We have silenced the coach. But, no, I want to hear him weigh in on some stuff coming up. We're going to run through some other stuff here. Jimmy Garoppolo appeared in a game. Granted, it was because C.J. Beathard, who might be the toughest player in the league, the way he gets knocked around and keeps getting up, actually didn't get up so quick. And he had to come in because of injuries. He played a couple plays. He was like 2 for 2 with a touchdown for like I think he had about 28 yards or something like that. He looked pretty good. His mechanics are still where they were. But and he is going to start at least this week because, once again, the injury is going to force their hand to have to play him because I'm not sure who their other option is. I guess we'll ask Cody at some point. But, you know, what do you think about starting Jimmy G this early in the year, Coach?
Well, I mean, I think it's time. I think with all that went on and making the trade and doing the deal to get him there, they have to now see their value in this. The thing that I'm going to be looking for is how well he adjusts because he's been such a system quarterback for so long. How well does he adjust now to being in a situation where he doesn't have all the components around him that he's used to? So now this game is going to be very telling with a different type of offense that he's going to be, you know, he's going to be at the helm of now. So this is also going to let them know whether or not he's going to have a future there, and they're going to try to use it as a negotiation piece later as we get closer to the draft. With quarterbacks being very limited coming out this year, what will San Francisco do with that? Will they basically hold or will they fold on him and make moves to try to pick up something else that they might need down the stretch in draft picks?
Yeah, I think that is the consensus idea there. Reggie, did you get a chance to see Jimmy G play? And if not, how do you think the rest of this year plays out for him?
No, I actually did get a chance to see him play. I happened to be in the Bay Area when that game was going down. So some of the people in the room were 49ers fans. He looked good. I mean, honestly, he came in a few plays threw a touchdown pass. He was very poised. Consequently, Shanahan has already put it out there that they're going to franchise tag him regardless of whatever his contract situation is at the end of the year. I think he has a place there. I think he'd be a fool to look anywhere else. In Shanahan's offense, he could quite potentially become a superstar. They've got, I think I heard, $100 million in cap space or something ridiculous with draft picks. I mean, they could quite frankly become the L.A. Rams of next year, given Shanahan and his reputation. He's been to the Super Bowl. He comes from that pedigree. I mean, there are a lot of players that will go out there to play with this guy. I mean, Garoppolo coming from a New England organization is only going to help draft, you know, bring players in. They've still got Carlos Hyde and some other guys, some other pieces on offense. But he'd be a fool, in my opinion, to leave. I think that he's where he needs to be. I think at this point it's probably just about the money.
Yeah. And I've said on I don't remember if it was the one you were on, Reggie, or the one you might have been on, Coach, that – If I was Jimmy Garoppolo and his agent, I would point to the franchise tag starting number and say, that's where my number starts. Because if not, you can just tag me and I'll hang out for that.
Agreed. I mean, they're giving away $200 million contracts to quarterbacks now, and he's young enough. He obviously can, you know, has grasped the situation for him to come in the way that he did and show what he's capable of. Like, it's an ideal situation for him. I mean, I heard he was ecstatic to be going out there, and they get a younger version of a Kirk Cousins and somebody that, you know, Shanahan can take and make his own. I'm excited and a little afraid, honestly, about what the 49ers can become from an NFC perspective, because having Shanahan here and knowing what he was able to do with an aging Matt Ryan, I mean, imagine what he can do with a Garoppolo who's a little bit more mobile and definitely a lot shorter in the tooth. I mean, he could turn that thing into a dynasty real quick. I'm not sold on John Lynch being a GM, but again, you know, it's kind of a no-brainer when you've got a coach that can take whatever you give and turn them into superstars.
Yeah, and I do want to transition from one pretty good quarterback to arguably the best in the league. Aaron Rodgers has been throwing in practice a little bit. Seems like he's pain-free, and I think the general consensus is exactly what we've said the whole time. If I think he's eligible week 15 to come back because of his IR designation. I think if they're still right there on the cusp like they are right now, that if you're Green Bay, you got to play Aaron Rodgers week 15 no matter what Brett Hundley's doing.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I think one of the things, though, right now is this allows Huntley to really showcase his talent. I think that Coach McCarthy maybe, in my opinion, and this is a small opinion, that maybe he should have turned him loose a little bit more in that first game. I think he kind of limited him. I think he was very enthusiastic about getting it. I'm not saying he's not now, but he's been playing well considering that they've lost some games and then the plethora of injuries that Green Bay is facing right now on the defensive side of the ball as well as the offensive side of the ball. We have a lot of players still out that are coming in there basically game by game. But I was very impressed with what he did when he played in the Pittsburgh game. Again, we're right there on the cusp. And if I think the next two games will kind of determine where some things are. Now, again, with Aaron back in practice, back throwing, I don't want us to find ourselves in a situation where we're rushing him back. If it's one of those years where we don't make playoffs, for whatever the reason may be, at least you now know what stands behind Aaron Rodgers, and that's a good thing. But again, you know, if we're right there on the cusp, I can pretty much guarantee that Aaron will be back in the mix upon, you know, clearing any other medical situations that he may have, and they'll put him right back in there. I just think right now it's just about where Huntley can and McCarthy can get that relationship to win one or two football games to keep us on the hunt. And I think that's the plan right now, short term. Long term, we'll be trying to get Aaron back at week 15 if we're still in the fight and move forward and try to get into the playoffs and try to make a run of it at that.
We need a breaking news button because I would hit it right now and go, this just in, Coach Hill says Aaron Rodgers will return. But, Reggie, go ahead.
Well, I mean, given the strength of the NFC, it's obvious at this point, given the success of the Vikings, that, you know, Green Bay's not going to get in as a division winner. I mean, Minnesota can lose every other game they got left, and Green Bay can win every game, and it won't matter. But with that being said, based on the strength of the NFC, I would do, as Coach said, let Hundley play it out to see what you've got, much like a Brett Favre scenario when Aaron Rodgers was on the bench, right? Let him show what he's worth so that you know, you can make the determination in a draft situation whether you need to go another route. But I wouldn't rush Aaron back. I mean, he's too critical to the NFL. He's too critical to Green Bay. And you're not going to get there. I mean, unless you just really turn it on, it's a fight in the NFC right now. And I don't know if you take that risk. I wouldn't take that risk if I were McCarthy.
Yeah, but the thing we're not factoring in is that Aaron Rodgers, at the end of the day, is a competitor. He's having to the two people, you know, Brady was obviously chasing. He was chasing Manning and Montana, Jeff Gordon was chasing Richard Petty, those kinds of things the whole time. At the end of the day, Aaron Rodgers is chasing really two people. He's chasing the legacy of number four that was in front of him as far as being one of the best in the Green Bay era, and he's also chasing Tom Brady, who is considered the best in the league, although you could make the argument Rodgers is at times too. So I think the competitiveness in him, he's going to do what he does a lot, and this is not a detraction. I think he's going to throw his weight around a little bit, and if they're on the cusp, if they're right there about potentially being a wild card, I think Aaron comes out even if he's 80%.
Yeah, I think he solidified himself, though, as probably, in my mind, I mean, we could talk Bart Starr, we could talk Brett Favre, but in my opinion, Aaron Rodgers is the best to ever wear green and gold. I mean, and probably one of the best in the NFL, to be honest.
He doesn't have to win a second ring to prove that, which is crazy. Usually we talk about how many rings did he have? Oh, how many rings? How many championships? How many Super Bowls did he go to?
No,
with Aaron Rodgers, we're already talking about, even without the one ring, he's right up there.
Dude, when I tell you Aaron Rodgers is a close second to Tom Brady, and the ring conversation is the only reason that I don't consider him first. I mean, he
Correct.
Is the most phenomenal quarterback that I have ever seen in my time. And I don't think he has anything to prove. I agree with you with the competitive spirit, but I think Aaron Rodgers is smart enough to say, hey, look, you know, I may have to take an L this year for the sake of us coming back next year and taking in retaking our claim in the NFC North and in the NFL. Again, I just wouldn't rush it. This seems a bit quick for something as big as a collarbone injury. We're talking about something else or one of the other extremities, then maybe, but I wouldn't do it.
Okay. Yeah, I want to move on a little bit because I want to get to a couple of these other things. That's another thing we'll table as well, because I think in the coming weeks we'll know exactly where Green Bay and Aaron stand as far as what's going to happen the rest of this year. And Coach, I'm also pretty high on Hundley. I'm actually benching Dak in my fantasy league to play Hundley this week because I don't like the matchup. And pretty much my fantasy season is all reliant on Mr. Hundley's shoulder. So if you want to go on and give him a wink, wink, nod, nod, and maybe buy him a sandwich, that'd be real nice for me this week.
I don't think he's going to disappoint.
Yeah, I don't think he will either. I really like what I've seen out of him. And like you said, now that they've kind of pulled the reins off of him a little bit, McCarthy's just looking at him like, you know what you're doing, go do it. So I feel pretty good about what's going to happen. But I want to talk about Jim Mora, who was let go as the head coach of the UCLA Bruins. The Mora family in general have always been very entertaining. Plus, they're really good coaches. And to me, they're NFL coaches more than they are college coaches. But I put on our sheet today, Jim Mora coaches in blank next year. I know Coach agrees with me that he should be in the NFL. Reggie, where do you think Jim Mora coaches next year?
I don't really see him coaching anywhere. I mean, not as a head. Maybe he comes in as a coordinator somewhere, but I haven't heard a whole lot of buzz about anywhere he's being taken, you know, he's been considered. Maybe Tennessee is taking a look at him. I certainly don't see it at the NFL level, but I don't think he coaches anywhere next year, to be honest.
Okay, Coach.
I think there's a possibility he'll squeeze back in. Why? Because he's been out long enough, but yet he's still young enough. And because he has head coaching statuses under his belt, it's just going to kind of depend on what's going to shift in the atmosphere. We were talking earlier about, just certain situations with certain teams. One of the teams that I probably will put him in the hat with, believe it or not, would be probably Dallas down the stretch. I don't know what's going to happen with Jason down there. I think that Jason's had a long run. I think Jason might have another year or two. Another situation that you could put him in is in New York. It's chaotic, but again, something that can smooth it over. And then the coaching carousel always happens every year, regardless of the ink that's on the contract. We see players go, we see coaches go. So I do feel that if he wants to come back to the NFL, now would be the time for him to make the move. And I do agree with you, Reggie, probably as a coordinator. But, again, I easily see him back in the league within the next 2 years if he chooses to come back. That's going to be the key, whether or not he wants to come back to the NFL versus if he finds comparable salaries still at the Division I level. I mean, because he does have his foot in that, you know, heavily for a while at UCLA. But I do feel that he'll be somewhere. He'll be coaching somewhere, whether it be the NFL or Division I-A football is going to be the question.
Yeah, he'll definitely be coaching somewhere. And I actually think the thing that we always neglect a lot of times when we talk about the coaching carousel and such like that, for one, it hasn't really started yet in the NFL. It'll happen here shortly. I think we'll see the first few heads start to roll. But we don't ever take into account, in this case, Mrs. Mora, who probably enjoys living in the UCLA area. You know, you're not going to be able to convince her or her husband to, you know, probably move from, you know, LA to Indianapolis or, you know, Dallas might be comparable because it's got a lot going on in that city. Depends on what she's after there. But yeah, we never take into account that the wives a lot of times just will flat out tell their husbands, hey, I'm not moving to Minnesota. I'm not moving to, you know, South Dakota for you to take that job. Take something else.
Yeah, potentially, but you know what? I'm going to leave that comment alone. I disagree.
Right, right. We all know how that would go in our own households, and I would always take that into account about an opportunity. So, but let's move on to what is being billed as the next potential, what, UFC 2000 or whatever number they're up to. Aqib Talib and Michael Crabtree are at it again. This time it spilled over onto the sideline. And was pretty close to some NFL officials and front office people, as well as some team officials. And it could have went south had they rolled up on somebody or something like that. I like that they initially said two games. I don't like that it was knocked down to one, because now you set the precedent that you can openly, practically UFC fight on an NFL field, and the worst thing that happens, you get kicked out of a game and you miss one more game. To me, it should have been at least two or three games just to get somebody's attention.
Yeah, but given the recent decline in ratings and air quotes, I mean, the NFL is looking for any attention that they can get, coupled with the fact that, you know, this is one of those ongoing stories, right? It happened last year. It's going to happen. We knew it was going to happen this year. It'll probably happen again next year. At the end of the day, you know, it's football. You know, I personally wouldn't have rather seen them get kicked out at all. It brings back the energy of the game. It brings back the very nature of the game, like it or not. It's a violent sport. These guys are gladiators. This isn't powder puff or soccer or any of those other, you know, lower contact sports. This is gladiator sports, and that type of stuff happens. It happened in the past, and it's going to continue to happen one way or the other. It's just two guys that just don't like each other, and it is what it is.
All right.
My concern are the player safety each and every time, and then how far this spills over outside of the field of play. That's a big concern. Football is a very small community. Professional sports is a very small community where everyone knows everyone. So my biggest concern with this, is it just football related, or is there something deep-seated between these two individuals that can find itself as news headlines in a nightclub or somewhere else? So I'm real interested to see what's the backstory behind that, because, again, yes, I agree with you, Reggie. It's a gladiator sport. Players, it's physical. It's all about being physical, but sometimes that can be taken to an extreme. And I'm interested to see how far this will go, and if this one-game suspension will put a pause button more so than something that can continue to gravitate to something more extreme down the stretch. I'm a little interested to see how internally the teams are going to handle this, as well as just the league, you know, at large. They, like you said, again, they went from a two game to a one. But again, you don't want to give players the ideas you can get into these fisticuffs and have these, you know, these Western movie style fights, and all you get is just a one game suspension as a result of it. This especially when they're talking safety all the time in regards to anything else.
Well, you know what, to that point, I'll throw out there quickly. I mean, Coach Hill, you and I both grew up in neighborhoods that, you know what, if you got beef, you got beef. And there isn't an off season, a game, a suspension, a fine, anything that will prevent you from trying to get to that guy. They had the same altercation last year. There was nothing that took place in the off season because they really not about that life. I'm just going to put it out there. I mean, how do we know that this wasn't done for Hollywood? You know, if you really got an issue with somebody, you're going to get them. There's nobody that can stop that. And neither one of those guys did anything in the off season to suggest that. So, again, I still hold true to the fact that I believe that this may have been a little bit of stage for TV.
Wow. Okay.
Or then again, they're on teams that aren't doing very well. Maybe they were just tired of playing and wanted a week off.
Well, that's the consensus coming from the sportscasters right now, is that, you know, it was the frustration of, hey, our teams are terrible and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, it's hard to tell because we don't really know what goes on inside the bellows of the NFL. It's just kind of one of those things. So we'll see.
Right.
But I personally don't think there'll be anything else out of it.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that. But I'm going to move right from that into this is an argument I've been trying to make for a while, and now I think it just ultimately makes sense the way some of these hits have been here lately. The NFL needs a targeting penalty, and they need it really, really badly. We see what it does in college. Sure, they don't want to throw kids out in college, but I've witnessed three or four hits, like, live in person that if you look like you lowered your head on purpose or you intend to injure, yeah, you have no business being on a field like that. There's a difference in being physical in football and trying to hurt somebody. And it seems like in the NFL, there's a lot of these unnecessary hits. And I don't want to water the game down. Like you said, it's football. At the end of the day, I put a helmet on, you put a helmet on, and we're going to hit each other. That's just what happens. But I think if they implemented a targeting penalty, the whole ejection thing they have to work on, but a severe penalty for some of these ridiculously dumb hits that have no business in the game, I think could ultimately make this game a lot better. Coach, what do you think?
Well, taking into consideration that CTE is no longer a myth but a reality, I do think that something needs to be put in place. We do have personal fouls. We do have those things. We do have concussion protocols. They're looking at hits for fines. Those are the ways that they are addressing it now. But at some point, something really, really has to be done in the event of protecting not just quarterback players in general. I mean, the game has evolved. The game is much faster than it was 20 years ago. And each year, the competition committee has to go and basically deal with a lot of the gripes and complaints of how to maintain the integrity of the game as it pertains to the safety of the future players in the game. So I think they will come up with something in the offseason. And I'm sure they are even probably having discussions around it now because, again, some of the hits that some of the players still taking are very extreme. There's still a few. It's not as bad as it once was, but there are still some hits there that are questionable. And, again, if you don't put something out there that clearly states that, you know, we are not taking away the physicality of the game, but we must protect players. I mean, players that are trying to knock out players get themselves knocked out. So there's a reverse effect when you're using the term target, there's a reverse effect to that as well with players' helmets hitting the ground and bouncing up and, you know, concussions that come out of that as well. So it's going to be real interesting to see what the competition committee does this year, but it is something I'm sure they're going to address.
Yeah, you got to find the motivation for these players, and you got to let them know, like you said, with CTE being a reality now, you got to let them know. It's like, look, guys, you can be physical, but we already penalized you heavy for taking headshots. Now if you take unnecessary hits, we got to do the same thing, whether it's dipping into the pocketbook a little bit or at the same time, you know, costing them playing time or something like that. We got to make it safer because there's too many people. Like that Amari Cooper hit last weekend was I really felt bad for that guy because he had a bad look on his face. He was like frozen. That's usually stinger territory, and I've seen some pretty bad stingers live, and they're not fun either. But I think it was with you, Reggie, a couple of weeks ago that I made the case that Kirk Cousins is the new Aaron Rodgers, or to a point. They have a lot in common. I'm going to go ahead and throw Russell Wilson in this boat too, almost to a different nth degree. All three of these mean so much to their team that a lot of times the defense does everything they can to make a stop, and the coach just looks at them and says, "Hey, we're down 10 with 2 minutes. Just can you try to figure something out?" Especially Pete Carroll in Seattle with Russell Wilson. We know how good the defense is. They've been dinged up lately, but they spent all the money on the defense, and then Pete just kind of looks at Russell and goes, "Hey, can you try to make this work?" Instead of, you know, actually trying to help him out. Do I get any argument from you guys on this?
No, none for me, especially when you're talking about dangerous, as he's being coined.
Mm-hmm.
That guy just takes over a game. despite whatever he has going on, he puts the game on his shoulders, much like what Aaron Rodgers does. Kirk Cousins, I think, again, has those tendencies. I don't think he does it as recklessly, quote unquote, as maybe Dangerous does. But absolutely, I think they're both the type of quarterbacks that influence a game and can influence a game on their own. I am anxious to see where Kirk Cousins ends up next year. That's probably high on my list, or the highest on my list as it relates to free agency next year.
I agree with Reggie. I think that Cousins is the one that is under my microscope right now. The other two have solidified themselves with their organizations. But with Cousins, it's going to be real interesting to see where he ends up and what he does, whether staying there and watching or moving on to someone else's organization. I think he's right there on the cusp of doing some things just as great as the other two players that I mentioned.
Yeah, and, up until the Book of Eli stuff started writing new chapters this week, I had actually thrown out – I don't know if I'd ever said it on the show, but I had actually thrown out, what if Kirk Cousins went down the East Coast there, took a little trip, and ended up in Jacksonville? Could you imagine the Jacksonville offense with Kirk Cousins slinging the ball?
With that defense that they have –
that's borderline Super Bowl, right?
Yeah, with Fournette in the backfield. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the piece you go after. If you're really and Tom Coughlin's that type of guy. I mean, he knows talent. I mean, to be able to go in there with what was already in place, much like McVay did in L.A., they've both proven that it wasn't talent. It was coaching or organization. Kirk Cousins, if he goes there and wants to win and put himself in the discussion and a chance to win a Super Bowl, absolutely. I think those are some guys that could challenge an aging Tom Brady and the Patriots for the crown on the AFC side for sure.
All right, Coach.
Yeah, I mean, again, if you remember, I talked about Jacksonville a couple of years ago.
Yep.
And saying that they were an organization to keep them on your radar, and now everything I said about them is starting to come true. The only thing I think they're missing now is that one element, and Kirk Cousins might be that piece that finally gives them the visual that they need to make them, you know, some very good contenders moving forward. So, again, as I said a couple of years ago, don't sleep on Jacksonville. I like what I saw in them, and they've slowly built it to the point, and I think if they can get a Cousins or get someone as close to a Cousins in place, then they're going to be well on their way. Look out for Jacksonville.
Yeah, I'll just throw this out because we'll obviously table this for later as well as that argument. But if you can't get Kirk Cousins, I feel like Case Keenum will be available, and he might be just enough to get you there too. But I want to talk some Falcons as we get into the last quarter here of the show. Of course, they have the big win versus Tampa Bay, and seeing as how we have our resident Falcons expert Reggie on. Reggie, it seems like there's a new breakout star in Atlanta. He caught a handful of passes, and he had a couple touchdowns. It was Julio Holmes. Am I saying that right? Is this the new breakout guy they signed?
Yeah, he has definitely reemerged in this offense. Something has happened internally with the way that Sarkisian is running this offense. I don't know what it is. There's been a lot of speculation, but it was good to see. And it all comes down to, like another Falcon friend of mine told me, give Matt Ryan time, and that's what he does. Is he's going to carve you up. To see Mohamed Sanu come in and throw that touchdown pass was probably bigger for me than anything else that Matt has done, because it shows to me that they're having fun with the game again. And I think that's what was missing, is that, you know, these guys were under so much pressure to repeat in the 28-3 and all of this madness that's been going on since the Super Bowl. To see these guys finally just kind of shake it off and just have some fun, they're going to be dangerous. They're going to be dangerous. They got a tough game coming up on Sunday, as well as the following Thursday, as noted in your notes. But, you know, they're a team that nobody wanted to see them get to this point, right? Everybody was hoping that they would kind of stay asleep. And for them to kind of come in, I'm still a little concerned about the fact that we're giving up points so late in the game. But the fact that, you know, okay, they went and scored, or gets close, Matt Ryan comes right back out and, you know, goes up another score. That's indicative of what we saw last year. So look out. I mean, they seem to have figured it out, and Julio's having fun. We get into these discussions all the time, or I see these discussions about who's better between Julio and Antonio Brown and who's the best receiver. That dude is a freak of nature. And bottom line, Antonio Brown is good. But I don't know of a receiver that I've seen, and I even heard some references made to who's the guy from Minnesota? I can't think of his name now, out of Marshall. I don't know why I can't think of his name now.
Oh, Randy Moss.
But Randy Moss. There were some references made that, you know, Julio's much like him. I don't even think Randy Moss was anything like Julio. I just don't. That's why it's easy to let go of a drop catch in Carolina, because he's going to come back and do something like this. I mean, the only player to have three games over 200 plus yards receiving, and he's just halfway through his career. It's crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah, and I want to come back to Julio in a second. And Coach, I want to let you weigh in here in a second too. But you brought up that pass by Sanu. Now, myself and Coach, this is part of the show, if you guys are playing along at home, that Reggie is going to put his hand over his face and shake his head in a minute. Me and Coach were talking, and that pass by Sanu might have been the best pass of the day, not just for the Falcons, but for either team. What do you think?
No, I agree. I mean, it was a perfect spiral. It had
beautiful.
A perfect arc. It hit him right in the hand. He didn't have to do anything but catch it. Also, what was very interesting, and I mentioned this to another buddy of mine, Sanu, unbeknownst to me at the time, he is our third-string punter and our third-string place kicker. So that guy just has talent coming out of his ears. And so now the contract that he was given that we all kind of barked about, like, wow, you getting this guy this much money, makes sense now. I mean, given what he's doing for this offense, he brings the attitude. And you can't really double-team Julio anymore. I mean, the Vikings would be fools to double-team Julio on Sunday, because Sanu can kill you just as much, if not more, than what Julio does.
All right, Coach, I'll let you go now.
Okay, let's back up real quickly to the plays that were made by Julio Jones. Julio Jones is the type of player that he's used to big-time football. Coming out of Alabama, he's a big-time player. And I think at this moment, he is turning on the burners. He is forcing his will. Again, a lot of the plays that he made in that game were still, the balls were thrown in tight windows, even when it comes down to the touchdown. But when Julio, when he turns it on, he turns it all the way on. And I think he realizes what the schedule ahead of them faces and what they pretty much need to do. And you're going to see this week in and week out moving forward. I'm also concerned about his hamstring. He did tug at it a couple of times in the game. I don't know if it was just due to tightness or what the case may be, or if it still goes back to where I think he might have hurt it in that Carolina game when he stretched for a ball. But nevertheless, he's tough as nails, and expect to see more of Julio, because now he's about to impose his will. And he's that type of player that when he decides that you're not going to stop him, you will not stop him. I don't care if you put three people on him, he will find a way to catch the football. excuse me. Going back to Sanu, the thing that impressed me most about that pass was that he bobbled it first. And he showed such great composure to still stand there, collect himself, and make that type of play. I would be curious to know, had it been in the hands of anybody else at that moment, what would have been the outcome. But it proves that, you know, he can offer you some value, and now defensive coordinators, although they're not going to spend a lot of time on it, they have to now factor in that when Sanu in, it's not a wildcat moment anymore. He can throw this ball to anybody. And so now, you know, there you have it. You have another element of your defense that you have to now factor in. What happens when Sanu gets up on the center? Or he's in shotgun. Is he running it? Is he passing it? What are they going to do with it? But I thought it was a beautiful pass as far as where he put the ball placement. I mean, it couldn't have been anywhere better. And I agree, it was one of the best passes of the day.
Yeah, it's fun that we get to joke around about things like that, too, even though we're serious about how good that pass was. That means the Falcons are doing well, which obviously always makes our show better. I mean, obviously we know, you know, people that tune in know Reggie's obviously the big-time Falcons fan here, and me and Coach have taken some good, fun shots at Matt Ryan, and we always talk about the good and the bad, but, you know, it's always a good day, especially in the Atlanta area, when the Falcons have that victory.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, especially coming off of the 28-3 discussion. I mean, listen, we were concerned as fans. It's, you know, you see us – we didn't want to buy into the whole Super Bowl hangover synopsis that's been kind of going around every radio show, every TV show across the nation, across the world. So to see them kind of bounce back was good for me. I mean, three games in a row – And now all of a sudden offense is not the problem. And I was even looking at some stats for something I had to write a little bit earlier. And even with the defense, they're the 10th ranked defense in the league right now. And so again, not really the team you want to face. To be honest, Sunday's going to tell the tale. If they go in, if they go Sunday, beat the Vikings, come home, beat the New Orleans again, they get kind of a bye week or about 11 days off, not really the team you want to see. They're just not. Because like Coach mentioned a little bit earlier in some of our other discussions in the past, is they're seasoned now. They know how to play five quarters. They know what it takes. And that trumps a Vikings or an Eagles or a Rams team who hasn't been there before, right? These guys are going in with the experience. So look out. Look out for the Falcons, thankfully.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I forgot if we've even mentioned that Devontae Freeman is actually active now. He's at a concussion protocol. They definitely should be careful with that because Coleman and Ward proved that even number two and number three on this team could be 1-2 or even 1-1 anywhere else in this league.
Yeah, I wouldn't rush Coleman back. I've read where he was contemplating whatever that special helmet was for players who have, you know, frequent concussions, but then he backed up off of it. I'm hoping he reconsiders. But, I mean, Tevin ran well enough. I think, you know, you're probably not going to get very much success on just, you know, standard handoffs against that Vikings defense. So, I mean, Coleman tends to be that guy that's a little bit better out of the backfield catching the pass. I wouldn't rush Coleman. I wouldn't rush Freeman back just for his own sake. Save him. I mean, if you have to play him at all during the regular season. But, again, that's that same Aaron Rodgers comment. You know, he's a competitor. He's not going to want to sit on the sidelines. You can see him getting antsy, and he wants to be out there. So he could care less about what happened to him. He's just ready to get out there. So.
And, Coach, you actually agreed with us, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. That was one of the things that I pointed out is that one thing I want to back up real quickly and say as far as I think Atlanta has been in playoff mode since the previous two games. They now have the back end of their season where they pretty much almost need to win it out to make sure that they solidify their spot because there are going to be some counseling of so a couple of teams will counsel each other out in the win-loss category. But, however, I think Atlanta is now in playoff mode and have been for the last two games. When it comes to Freeman, I do agree that they need to rest him right now. I don't think that you need to rush him back. I think what Coleman gives you out in the field of play as another receiver at, you know, at least at the intermediate route, somewhere between 12 and 15 yards consistently. So there's no need to rush him back. Ward needs to work on securing the ball a little bit more. His mechanics are a little off, in my opinion, but he is durable enough. And I think with your 2-3 punch right now, you have enough to go in and compete with anybody. Again, if you're going to put Coleman back in the mix, spot play him here and there, and with that understanding that he's not going to get the ball a lot, but enough to keep himself fluent and keep himself ready. But again, I think another week and or two wouldn't hurt them right now. If you want to bring him back, I think bringing back in the New Orleans game where you have a short week, and those two guys are really putting in the work right now in Coleman and Ward, and bringing back in that game a little bit more, give him a little bit more playing time there so that you can rest those, you know, those two guys, and then keep it moving from that point. But a rush is not necessary.
That's actually a good strategy. I like that. And it's good that they have that option that they can, usually on a short week, people are already banged up from the weekend before, but you would have a fresh back ready to go right there that would actually give Coleman and Ward a little bit of leeway as well. The last two questions, yeah, Falcons wise, that we'll answer is like you mentioned earlier, Reggie, got Minnesota this week, arguably the first or second best team in the NFC right now. They're one of the first teams in a long time that stand a chance to actually play a Super Bowl game in their actual stadium. But you got them this week, and then New Orleans on the short turnover for Thursday next week. We said before, but it really plays in now. The Falcons hold their future in their hands between this game with Minnesota and all the division games left.
Yeah, it does. And this is the perfect position that you want to be in as a team, is you hold your destiny. I mean, I think there are two very tough games that are coming up, but this is going to tell you what type of Falcons team you not only have this year, but what you had last year, if last year was a fluke or not. I think talent-wise, we definitely have the ability to beat both teams. We have the advantage of both games being here. The thing they have to look forward to is, hey, you go in, you beat a Minnesota, you beat a New Orleans, you've closed the gap in the NFC South, you've kind of solidified your playoff run a little bit better, and then you get 11 days off. And like I said, more like a bye week. So I think there's something to be seen in what they're going to do Sunday. I think Sunday's going to tell the tale about where we're at as a team. So I'm looking forward to Sunday. I think this is where the true test begins.
I agree, Rich. I think the true test will begin Sunday with you guys, and the games that you're facing down the stretch are going to play a huge role in what you become. But I am really, really excited to see what Atlanta's going to do with this. I think the brotherhood that the head coach has been trying to instill over the last couple of years will now truly manifest itself with the rest of the games that you guys have.
Yeah, exactly. And, it brings us to our last closing, I guess our one-minute drill here. Not time-wise, just the last thing we'll really say here is the last question that the Falcons have to answer is, can they keep pace with New Orleans and Carolina? I think they can keep pace, and there's a good chance they're going to surpass at least one of them at some point. I think Atlanta, realistically, they do have a shot at their division, but realistically, I think they're going to be the 5 seed. What do you think, Coach?
You know what? I think a lot of it is going to hinge on what happens Sunday or what happens Thursday. I do feel that they can keep the pace. I do feel that Atlanta still very well might pull this division win off, to be quite honest with you guys. I mean, I think that they have enough depth. I think they have the experience. I think they know what is ahead of them right now, and they're most definitely focused on the task at hand. So moving into this game on Sunday is going to set the pace for where they end up at the end of the year, and I think they know exactly what to do, and they know exactly what has to be done at this point to put themselves right where they need to be. I think they're going to surpass both of them, actually. I really do.
All right, and final word goes to the King ATLN himself, Reggie Walker.
Hey, I agree with everything that Coach Hill said. I think that, you know, they know what they need to do, and I think you'll see them start to do it come Sunday.
There you go. Short, sweet, and to the point. Usually not how we operate here, but it works tonight. That's going to do it for us this week. Appreciate all you guys tuning in and listening. Maybe in the next coming weeks we will open the phone lines and listen to some of you guys. I know a lot of people chime in. Our text line always lights up. We definitely appreciate that. But Coach and Reggie, it's great having you guys back on. And hopefully we'll all be back on the next couple weeks as well, and we can keep talking about Falcons victories.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
But for the Coach Haywood Hill, for the King ATL and Reggie Walker, I am Jeremy the Impact York. We will see you guys next week. Go Falcons.
Shaking they boobies like Congo, man. I'm shaking the city like Quake. Yeah. The haters blow in the face like John Joker. I'm breaking the cake, so let's bake. Yeah. I'm taking the game's mine. Y'all witness the change, it's my time. Yeah, I'm new to the game, but y'all might wanna say you whack rap, stay like save the time. I can dance, homie, I don't choose, yeah. Y'all looking at something like a truth, yeah. A girl told me that a man that can dance might could possibly get down with the tool in his pants. Now I'm a lady, let me see it vibrate. And when it's over, you ain't gon' need your bird. Cause I'm a pro, make you bend your back low. Then the pound it real fast, just like the percolate.
Wobble, baby, wobble, baby, wobble, baby, wobble, yeah. Wobble, baby, wobble, baby, wobble, baby, wobble, yeah. Wobble, baby, wobble, baby, wobble, baby, wobble, yeah. Wobble, baby, wobble, baby, wobble, baby, wobble, yeah.
Missed it by that much.